Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettea along with Charlie Long. A little after 5:20, we'll have on with us from Crescent City Sports, Renee Nadeau, who covers the Saints, Tulane, LSU, also prep football. Mike talked to him a little bit about that. And then at 5:45, Steve Geller will join us for our triple option feature. Mike Haas and Deuce McAllister got together and had a little interview. So our WWL Sound Bank with Haas and Deuce is brought to you by First American Bank. Charlie, cue it up.
Good day, everyone. Mike Haas along with legendary running back Deuce McAllister. Second practice outside, fans short, as Coach Kellamore said yesterday. They're going to be short. Yesterday was short. Today was only about an hour and 15 minutes. I mean, it's not a lot to glean. But I guess when you're out there, What are you looking for, looking at?
And that's not by Coach Moore's decision.
No, CBA. CBA. Every team's doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's the buildup. It's the buildup that they have to do. And so, it's a couple things that you get to evaluate, you know, from a coach's standpoint, as well as even the staff, as far as staffing, who's been in shape. Who did something the last couple of weeks that they were off, and then what kind of memory that a lot of guys have. I mean, because this is day one, really day two installation type stuff. They haven't or won't get into deep installation. They want to see who can remember what, and so from that standpoint, it's been some positive stuff. I think that you'll start to see some separation for a couple of guys really around practice 7 or 8. I mean, because then you will be in pads, but also you will be kind of acclimated to the weather. And they've been blessed from the weather standpoint. It's been warm, but it hadn't been nearly what you normally get in New Orleans. So, I mean, those are really the things that you kind of see. There's going to always be some flashes, some plays or two that some guys make, which is always good. But that's overall really what you've gotten the last couple of days.
And so much focus on the quarterback battle. And I talked to Bobby about this yesterday, but the challenge is there's no joint practices. It's 11 on 11 or 7 on 7 against your own guys, really, until the Chargers. So it's going to be tough to have separation at that quarterback battle until you get into some of those games, right?
Yeah, I mean, the games will have probably a little bit more significant than they normally would if this was a different situation. But I have a new head coach. I'm going against a new defense. So from, hey, who can pick it up? You know, the speed of the game, all of those things you'll take into account. But at the end of the day, it'll be once you play against another team, just because you won't have a joint practice. And, you know, even some of the looks, they should remember some of this stuff from the spring, the OTAs. And so all of that you have to take into account as well.
Any particular battle? Final question. Maybe it's because of Tyron's retirement. You look at the safety position or tight ends because of the injuries, wide receivers because there's, I don't know, 20-some guys. Is there a particular position battle that kind of interests you?
I don't know if it's necessarily a battle per se, but, I mean, I think there's some spots that are still open on this roster just because not only from a starting standpoint but from a depth standpoint. You know, can we develop some depth at some certain positions, and then can we depend on this player? Do we have to trade? Do we have to bring another guy like Blackman that comes in? So I think that nothing will be settled in a sense. They're really going to try to turn that roster over in a lot of different places if they feel like a guy can help them.
Don't forget, Sports Talk today at 4 o'clock. Produced McAllister on Al Cost, WWL, AMFM.com, and always on the Odyssey app.
That was Mike Haas, Deuce McAllister, part of our WWL Sound Bank, and brought to you by First American Bank. Charlie, we've talked about it in nauseam almost for the past couple of weeks. I even brought it up to Coach Kellen Moore Tuesday about understanding what you got to do from play to play. And, okay, you played at the high school level. You played at the collegiate level. But it's like a new language. You're running sort of the same plays, but it how they called are different, and you got to remember what you got to do on each and every play. And I brought up to Coach Moore, hey, I'm not playing you if you don't know what you got to do. And I'm not talking about half the time. I'm talking about you better know what to do 90, 95 to 100% of the time. And he was like, yeah, I'm not putting you out there if you don't know what to do from play to play.
Mike, one thing that stood out from Deuce's comments there was him talking about the spots that are still up for grabs on the Saints roster, not just at starting spots, but also depth spots. And, you know, it's something that Kat Terrell brought up when she was on with us earlier this week about the Saints defensive line is – yeah. Obviously, we can't really see much until the pads come on Monday, which is, you know, practice session number 5, and then they'll be practicing in pads for basically the rest of camp. I think there's a couple shells practices still left in between, but you'll get to kind of get your first glance at the defensive and offensive lines at camp, the defensive line's an interesting spot, Mike. We know that typically you carry 9, maybe 10 defensive linemen, depending on what your roster kind of construction looks like in that 53-man roster. But how many of these guys are really locked in? You know what I mean? Like, it feels like a few guys are locked in, as far as maybe obviously Carl Granderson, Chase Young, who just signed an extension this past offseason, Cam Jordan going into these kind of the twilight years of his career. But it feels like there's...
And
obviously interior, yes. Yeah. Brian Bercy, who's really kind of blossomed early on in his career. It feels like there's a lot of depth spots up for grab on this defensive line, Mike, that, you know, maybe Nathan Shepard and Colin Saunders, who were interior guys last year, may not be guaranteed a spot on the Saints defensive line. They're going to have to earn it.
Okay, and you brought in Davin Godshaw.
You brought in Jonathan Bullard.
Jonathan Bullard, who was at camp today. We'll talk a little bit about Julian Blackman, who also was at the Saints camp today in practicing with the team. But, Charlie, that's why I brought it up to Mike Haas. You know, you can see somewhere along the line, one of two things will happen. Either injuries will make that call easier for you, or you're going to have to get rid of a veteran player or two.
I think that might be the case, ultimately, because like you had said with Haas, Mike, this team, what they did in run defense last year, and even
lousy,
what they did in pass rush last year, it just didn't cut it on the defensive line. They have to improve there. They have to take a step forward. They've added multiple different players up front, and I think there's going to be some battles to be won there. That's definitely one of those spots that you should be keeping an eye on once they do put on the pads.
Yeah, I talked to Rick Venturi today. Rick, longtime coach in the National Football League. He's does vision now for the Indianapolis Colts. And I told him my thoughts on Julian Blackman. I wanted to hear him talk to him. He said, Mike, that's pretty good evaluation. He agreed. He's with me that, hey, Blackman is a talented player. And he didn't come here to watch. He come here to play and start. And he has started that free and strong safety. Man, the problem was last year, just to watch him, and I went through 4 games last year. I picked games throughout the season, and that torn labrum really hampered him. It was an adventure to try to watch him tackle a guy in the open field. So if he's healthy, Julian Blackman can help this football team. He brings versatility. He's a tough guy. Listen, he started 16 games with a torn labrum. You got a lot of guys, they get that. Oh, man, they out. They're not playing.
They don't want to put out the bad tape, Mike, so to speak.
Exactly. And it hurt him, to be honest. Now, he did get some looks by a number of teams, and in particular, Carolina Panthers late. Dan Morgan, who is their GM, former linebacker in the National Football League, he really liked him. They could not come up with a contract terms with him. And then all of a sudden, once Tyrann Mathieu retired, it opened up the spot for him. Hopefully, he is healthy and can use that shoulder like he used to, because he was a good open field tackler at one time. Last year, you couldn't say that. He really struggled trying to make a tackle out into the open field with that torn labrum. And we all know about Bullard. He's versatile. He started 17 games for the Vikings last year. He's not a dynamic pass rusher. What he brings to the table is he can play end and tackle. He knows Brandon Staley's defense, and he plays the run well. Bingo. That's why you brought him in here. It's not because of his pass rush skills. He's never been a great pass rusher. He's always been a guy that hustles and plays the run really, really well. We'll be back, and when we return, we'll have on with us Rene Nadeau from Crescent City Sports. He'll talk to us about the New Orleans Saints, Tulane Green Wave, LSU Tigers, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line from Crescent City Sports, covers the Saints, all the college teams, and also the prep ranks, Rene Nadeau. Rene, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Mike, it's great to be with you and Charlie today. Thank you.
Before we get into Saints talk, I got to ask you, because certainly it was the big news earlier in the week, Tulane landing former BYU quarterback Jake Retzlaff. And, we've had on Coach Sumrall, and he was really bullish, Rene, on his defense. He, You could hear it in his voice, even though he's got a lot of change there. He liked what he saw in the spring from his defense, but I could also hear in his voice he wasn't sure about that quarterback situation. Now you bring in Jake, who, you know, that's something about winning games at the high level of college football. And Retzloff did that at BYU.
He did, Mike, and you were absolutely right about the defense. You know, they added a couple of big names, Mo Westmoreland from UTEP and also Santana Hopper from Appalachian State, a couple of edge rushers that really going to improve that defense. But, you know, Retzloff, as you alluded to, 2,900 yards, 20 touchdowns last year, 12 interceptions. But the thing about him, which kind of jumps out from the rest of the group at Tulane, is he's a mobile guy. He ran for over 400 yards and 6 touchdowns. Now, the thing is, he's just getting on campus, and they just about 30 days away from starting, from the season opener. But it's going to be a learning curve for Retzloff because he's behind the rest of the guys, Samanza and Leary and those guys who went through spring practice. I can almost suspect, and I could be wrong, but I can almost suspect that, it's going to take him a little while to catch up. He may not be the opening day starter, Retzloff, but I can almost assure you that in the first couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, you'll see a Retzloff, a team that he can have an impact pretty much like he had at Brigham Young. It's going to be interesting. But, yeah, right now, as he lands on campus, Mike, you're right. He's the best possibility for a winning season, Retzloff.
Do you think this team could make it into that final 12?
You know, it depends on a quarterback. That's going to be a big if. And you know, how good are they going to gel? Also, how good will a defense with those new bodies coming aboard? And of course, they lost a couple of guys. Rayshon Pleasant left there. That was a big loss in the secondary. But, with the new additions on the defensive line, Mike and Charlie, I think they've really upgraded that defense. So to answer your question, it's going to depend the first few weeks. Northwestern comes to town. That's going to be a challenge for Tulane in the opening week. But, they're going to have to really have an outstanding season. I'm talking about 10 or 11 wins, I would think, to make a splash. But it's going to be tough. It depends how long it takes to kind of figure out that quarterback situation.
Renee, with the Saints right now in shells, we get them now. People, how does the defensive tackle look? Or the right guard? What? They in shells. We give you a little better explanation of that next week when they get in pads. But I think the preseason, when you in a rebuild mode, which this team is, and you can term it other ways, but they are in a rebuilding mode right now, those three preseason games are going to be critical for all the talent that they got to develop that was from the prior regime or try to develop, and what they brought in either via the draft, trade, or free agency.
And, Mike, you know better than anybody. It's going to take a little while. You know, they're carrying over that roster that Dennis Allen left them last year, but they go into a 3-4. Some of the talent on there is not going to really fit a 3-4 attack. Example, I know Carl Granderson has done pretty good as an outside linebacker. We've seen him run up the field, 25, 30 yards in coverage. Not sure if Chase Young could do that as an outside linebacker. Will he be one of those down linemen? So I don't know if they got the ideal guys to man that 3-4 defense right now. So it'll be kind of an evolving situation, to make sure that the outside guys can play that true 3-4.
Yeah, Renee, I just want to hop in here and ask you about the running back battle. I think it's one of the more interesting ones in camp because behind Alvin Kamara, it is just question mark after question mark after question mark. And I had seen some news that Devin Neal, the rookie 6th-round pick, was getting some run. I think that's very exciting. Mike and I spoke to Greg Cosell from NFL Films about him, and he really raved about the tape that he showed at Kansas, all the production that he had with the Jayhawk program, record-breaking numbers for them in his collegiate career. Just want to get your thoughts on Devin Neal and really the running backs behind Alvin Kamara. Kendra Miller is a big injury question mark, and I know that they brought in Cam Akers, who's another injury question mark. Just want to get your thoughts on that running back position.
Well, the thing is, Devin Neal, as you alluded to, he's 4,343 yards, 53 touchdowns for the Jayhawks. He played in 40 consecutive games, 760 carries, only 4 fumbles. He had 115 carries of 10 yards or more. He kind of reminds me a little bit, not as fast, but a Tyjae Spears. But, he's a guy that certainly, and I've watched him, he's got a good build on him, 5'11", about 215. Cam Akers, is in there now. He had a fumble yesterday. A guy is a dark horse. I kind of keep an eye on Marcus Yarns. He's a guy from Division II. He can be a guy who ends up on a practice squad, but he can be a contributor down the road. But something I was talking to the guys. In fact, I was talking to Bobby Abia yesterday about this and Steve Geller. You know, Kamara, I don't think people realize how good he is, but 228 carries last year, only one fumble. He is the only active. And you're talking about Derrick Henry and Christian McCaffrey. Even those two guys didn't do this. Kamara is the only active NFL running back to average 6 yards a carry during one season. And that was in 2017. And you look at the more factor, guys, Saquon Barkley and Kamara. Saquon Barkley with the Giants is last year. And those numbers he did with the Giants and Kamara's numbers last year are almost parallel. Now, I realize Saquon Barkley goes to the Eagles. They're a Super Bowl team. They got a great offensive line. But what kind of factor could, Kellen Moore have on Kamara now in his offense? I mean, I know I wouldn't expect him to run for 2,000 yards like Saquon did, but, you know, he could go over 1,000 yards. You look at a couple of guys who have done it in their 30s. John Riggins did it, 1,300 yards as a 34-year-old and a 35-year-old. And Frank Gore is another one who ran for over 1,000 yards at 33. So, and you both guys know Eric McCoy coming back is going to be huge for that offensive line. But, you know, how good can Kamara be under Kellen Moore? Who knows?
One of the things on defense, people say, well, who can make a quick impact from the rookies? I think Quincy Riley's got that shot. Having watched him at Louisville and every day in practice, Renee, you know, when you at Louisville, man, they throw in the football a lot in practice. So you're not only going up against people that throw the football a lot every day in practice, you having to defend that. And he can play both edge or in the nickel. It'll depend on exactly where you want to put him at. Today, you saw Spencer Rattler try to throw the football away at the back of the end zone, and Riley picked it off. That, to me, showed some really good football instincts that he was eyeing that quarterback, and Riley kind of didn't look off where he really wanted to go with the ball. Spencer Rattler.
I tell you who he reminds me of, and we've talked about this, guys. Quincy reminds me a little bit of C.J. Gardner-Johnson. You know, he plays man or zone. He's good in coverage, short tackler. He runs a sub 4.5 40. And he's, as you said, Mike, he's very versatile. I think Jonas Sanker at safety is going to get a shot now that Tyrann Mathieu is gone. And of course, Blackman's coming in. Another guy on the defensive line is Vernon Broughton, the kid from Texas. I've watched him and he looks very, very active. Only 24 years old. And of course, Bo Davis is the defensive line coach, so you know that's going to mean a lot to him. But those three guys, and I wouldn't discount at all Danny Stutzman. Danny Stutzman from Oklahoma, you know, three-time leading tackler for Sooners, and he'll get on the field some kind of way behind DeMario Davis on special teams, but his attitude is outstanding. Danny Stutzman is ready to do whatever he can do. So those are four guys right there that I think, as rookies, can certainly contribute to that defense.
Renee, couple LSU questions. I think last year and the last few years, we've seen this. LSU is no longer DBU. That's not the case anymore. Teams have really picked on their secondary. And I think Brian Kelly said, enough of this. I'm going out and get me a couple guys in the transfer portal that have played that safety position. He got, you know, two of the top three transfer safeties out there. And however, Mansoor, however you're going to play him, if he's going to play an edge corner or in the nickel, I think he could also play free safety if needed to. That is an area where we've talked about, you know, watch an offensive line because of four new starters. What's going to happen up front with the defensive line? I think the safety spot is the one area that I think is going to make a big leap this year for LSU.
And one guy, I know you have your eye on him, A.J. Halsey, the kid from Houston, a free safety. Good size, 6 foot, 215, 74 tackles last year, 5 interceptions. And you're right, Mansoor Delane, he could have come out probably in the third round. Mike, you know better than me, but he probably could have been a high draft choice this year. But 1,800 snaps, he's only allowed 47% completion, 16 passes broken up and 6 interceptions. Mansoor Delane can play a lot of different spots. And you got to wonder, how good DJ Pickett is going to be. How long is that learning curve as a 6'4 cornerback, a five-star guy who arrived? And you mentioned the safeties, Deshaun Spears, his second year, he had 25 tackles last year as a strong safety. He could really, you could see in a big improvement in a spring, Deshaun Spears could be a really contributor as a strong safety. So those guys, and of course, as you mentioned in the transfer portal, Jakeem Jackson comes over from Florida, and I think he'll be a big addition to that secondary.
You know, Renee, I wanted to ask you about LSU's pass catching room. Mike and I have talked a bunch about Bauer, Sharp, and Tre'Davious Green and how the two tight end sets are going to be utilized throughout the season. And the tight end room is as good as any on the team, really, if you're kind of projecting it. But the wide receivers as well, like you bring in Nick Anderson from Oklahoma, you bring in Barry and Brown from Kentucky, you return Aaron Anderson and Chris Hilton. Garrett Nussmeier has no shortage of weapons to attack with the passing game.
No, and he's got a lot of speed, Charlie. I tell you, Barry and Brown, a sub-4.340. Aaron Anderson, another speedster, had a big season last year. Xavier Thomas is kind of lost in the shuffle a little bit, but he can be special. Dustin Hill, kid from Edna Carr, comes over from Florida State. He was ranked ahead when he came out. He was ranked ahead of Malik Nabers and Keon Coleman. That's how good he can be when he came out as a prospect. Nick Anderson, good size, 6'4". Chris Hilton, you got to think this is his year to put it all together. And a guy might be a sleeper in this whole group is Kyle Parker. He's a guy in one game in high school had 23 catches for 341 yards and 5 touchdowns. That was in one game. Kyle Parker right now is about 13, but he'll wait for his chance. But it's guys like that, when the lights come on, they get their opportunity, they show what they can do.
You know, Renee, we talked with Tommy Ryback, the head coach at Nicholls State, and they're just under a month away from their season opener, which is week zero. We're just over a month away from LSU's season opener at Clemson. If you look at the books, basically across the board, they have Clemson as very slight favorites, about field goal favorite. It's supposed to be one of the premium games week one. LSU has got that 5-game losing streak at season openers. I know that Coach Kelly talked ad nauseum about it, basically at SEC Media Day, saying they've made it like a clear goal for this roster to start 1-0, to get the season off to the right foot. And we've talked to different reporters about that Clemson matchup. I want to get your gauge on it and kind of what you're thinking about it about a month away.
You know, we've talked about this in previous times we've talked. And the thing about LSU, I think they can match up athletically. The thing that kind of concerns me is the transfer portal could kind of work against LSU. LSU's got 16 transfer portals coming in. 12 are going to have significant roles on this team. How long? Clemson only has 5 transfer portals coming in. Plus, Clemson has, and Mike, you know this better than me, Clemson has 5, maybe 6 potential first-round picks on that team. That's how good they are, including the quarterback. But, you know, transfer portals, LSU will be a different team in week 3 or maybe 4 than they will be the first week. Are they good enough to put it all together? Don't know. But those transfer portals, as good as they are, those edge rushers, Pyburn and Patrick Payton and those kind of guys, how long will it take him to get on board and get up to snuff, as a group? Because if they can put it all together in week 1, they certainly have an opportunity. And if they knock Clemson off, certainly LSU will be in a high cotton in the national rankings.
Renee, the way I look at it, regular season, I think Clemson's the toughest team and most talented team they play.
Oh, Mike, there's no doubt. In fact, Clemson is the toughest team LSU has ever played, and that's taken into account Oregon back in 2011. Clemson is the toughest team, most talented team in that LSU will face maybe this whole year. I mean, they're really good. If they can put it together, Clemson is one of those teams that can make the Final Four in the college playoff. And how good Klubnik can be, the quarterback, I mean, right now he's neck and neck with Garrett Nussmeier. And again, you throw in the offensive line, how good they are, the right side of the offensive line might be the best right side offensive line in all of college football. And then you got Woods and you got the edge rusher, 2 number one draft choices. Yeah, this is going to be a stern test. And then you throw it all together that it's on the road in Clemson. That's going to be a tough challenge for Brian Kelly. But he looks like he wants to make sure that everybody knows LSU is looking forward to this game. They're going to get their best shot, and we'll see how it all falls out.
Renee, you know who might start at left tackle for them? Brandon Jacobs' son, Braden.
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
Man, when he got into the Bayou Hall of Fame, you know, Brandon was, hey, Mr. Mike, come here. I want to introduce you to my son. And, man, and you know, Brandon Jacobs a big dude. And, man, yeah. You got to say, man, what? He's like, well, he just turned 16 years old. And I'm like, what? And so he, I don't know if he's 18 yet, but if he is, he's barely 18. You talk about a man out there on the field. And I know one thing, he got some genetics in him. Man, because Brandon Jacobs, you got to see him play, man, when he was at Assumption. Woo, man, you didn't want to tangle with Brandon out on the football field.
Yeah, he was the real deal. And I tell you, what a talent he was. And very athletic. And, you know, the apple don't fall from the tree. But Clemson will be a stern test for LSU. Blake Miller, I don't know, Mike, you tell me, is Blake Miller the right tackle, the first-round potential for Clemson in the NFL draft? They are just loaded. And this will be the best challenge LSU will have in 2025.
Renee, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always love when you come on, buddy. You take care.
Mike, Charlie, y'all have a great day. Thank you.
Thanks, Renee.
All righty. Renee Nato from Crescent City Sports. When we come back, we'll be joined by Steve Geller on our triple option feature. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long, joined by Steve Geller. It's our triple option feature. Steve, I'm going to throw it to you first.
Well, guys, it flew a little under the radar today with a lot of stuff going on in the NFL, also with Hulk Hogan passing away. But the Pelicans did have a roster move today, guys. Pelicans, they waived Lester Quinones. He went undrafted out of Memphis in 2022, spent most of his first two seasons with the Golden State Warriors. Last fall, he signed a two-way deal with Philadelphia. They released him in December. The 24-year-old shooting guard would catch on with the Pelicans in March. Then he appeared in nine games down the stretch of last season when they had those, you know, tons of injuries for the Pelicans last season. So he got some run in those nine contests. He averaged 9 points, 3 assists, 2 rebounds in 18 minutes. That was a different regime back then, though, when Quinones was brought into the Pels. So we'll see what happens with him now. If he goes unclaimed, the 6'4" guard will be a free agent in a couple of days. Joe Dumars continuing to rework this roster in New Orleans.
Charlie?
Guys, I'm going with a report from Inside Carolina and also Sports Business Journal earlier today that said that North Carolina, the UNC Tar Heels, are potentially going to be exploring moving away from the ACC when conference realignment comes back, and they're targeting a potential move to the SEC, guys, alongside maybe even Clemson. If you have to kind of keep it the even number, both teams could potentially move from the ACC, and they are targeting the SEC in realignment, guys. UNC just feels like a good fit in the SEC, in my opinion. I don't know how you guys feel. Clemson, maybe as well. We'll see what ends up happening there. Obviously, I don't think realignment's going to happen necessarily anytime directly soon, but it's definitely interesting that the kind of, I guess, fishing pole is already out, and they're fishing around to potentially leave the ACC.
Charlie, one of the things there is North Carolina and that Atlantic coast is virgin territory,
right,
to the SEC, okay? And if I'm South Carolina, you think I'm voting to have Clemson come in the SEC? I ain't doing it.
Yeah, true.
That might be a tougher sell. I understand the North Carolina. That makes a lot of sense to me, that you put yourself on the East Coast. That's an area that, man, population-wise, has really blown up big time over the last 10 years. And so I could see the SEC being very interested. And as you pointed out, to try to get two teams, I've always felt North Carolina would be a good fit.
Agreed.
Who would be the second team? Because if I'm a Florida team, you think the Gators are going to vote to have Florida State or Miami in there? That ain't happening. They're going to push back on that pretty hard. And the same way, I think South Carolina and some of the people, even Tennessee or Kentucky, might push back on having Clemson join the SEC. I agree with you totally. I think the North Carolina deal looks to be one the SEC would really, really like. But who would be the second team?
Yeah, that's a good question, Mike. I mean, because it's not really like North Carolina is the one spot where the SEC footprint isn't. Like you had just said, there's going to be conflict with Clemson. There would be conflict with like Florida State, for instance, right? Trying to move from the ACC to the SEC. I don't know how high north you can really go and kind of stay. Granted, the ACC is Stanford in it, so geography doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't really know about that, but
I got to imagine the addition of Bill Belichick this year kind of helps their case for the SEC.
Well, I think Bill's stay is going to be short. I'll be honest with you, Steve. I think Bill, and I think he'll have early success at North Carolina. Listen, he can coach. There's no question about it. How much this grinds on him,
yeah,
of the way college football and college athletics are set up today, man, it's going to be tough. And is his eye really on trying to go from North Carolina maybe back to the NFL?
We'll see.
I think that may be a look he has in the back of his mind.
Does the rest of the SEC just tell South Carolina to kind of suck it up with Clemson, though? I mean, that's a legitimate idea. I think Clemson would be a pretty solid fit, too. It's just a matter of, yeah, that other in-state school that does not want them in the conference. I get
it. And the other thing, too, is, man, if I'm an LSU or Florida or Georgia, do I want to play Clemson? Now, I know you're part of the rotation, but do I want that?
Yeah.
That's another thing to think about. I know South Carolina. I know where that vote is. But some of the other teams might be saying, wait a minute here. Competition's tough enough in the SEC, and we're going to bring in – now, North Carolina's one thing. They've been a good team. Clemson has been a very good to excellent team. That is where it sort of cuts both ways here on how the SEC will look at it. But the one thing I do know, they do know how to count dead presidents on paper.
Yes, sir.
And if they think Clemson can bring them in more money than anybody else, hey, guys, y'all just suck it up, and we're going to bring them in. That's it for our triple option feature. We'll come back to finish it off here in hour number two right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL from 6 to 8. Steve and Charlie will take over. And I think it's at 7:30, Jeff Nowak, our Saints sideline reporter, Odyssey also guy, is going to be there. And Steve and Jeff have an interview with Taliese Fuaga, Saints right tackle, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.